tat ho idam this shrotum to hear ichchama all willing gaditum to narrate yadi if manyase you think bruhi please speak naha we shraddhananam who are very much respectful yashya whose jnanam transcendental knowledge adat delivered shuka Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. We all respectfully want to hear about him, Maharaj Parikshit, to whom Shukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please speak on this matter. Translation responsibly. We all respectfully want to hear about him. Maharaj Parikshit, to whom Shukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please speak on this matter. Purport. Shukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge to Maharaj Parikshit during the remaining 7 days of his life, and Maharaj Parikshit heard him properly, just like an ardent student. The effect of such a bona fide hearing and chanting of Srimad Bhagavatam was equally shared by both the hearer and the chanter. Both of them were benefited. Out of the 9 different transcendental means of devotional service to the Lord prescribed in the Bhagavatam, either all of them or some of them or even one of them are equally beneficial if properly discharged. Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami were serious performers of the first 2 important items, namely the process of chanting and the process of hearing. And therefore both of them were successful in their laudable attempt. Transcendental realization is attained by such serious hearing and chanting and not otherwise. There is a type of spiritual master and disciple much advertised in this age of Kali. It is said that the master injects spiritual force into the disciple by an electrical current generated by the master, and the disciple begins to feel the shock. He becomes unconscious, and the master weeps for his exhausting his store of so-called spiritual assets. Such bogus advertisement is going on in this age, and the poor common man is becoming the victim of such advertisement. We do not find such folk tales in the dealings of Shukadeva Goswami and his great disciple Maharaj Parikshit. The sage recited Srimad Bhagavatam in devotion, and the great king heard him properly. The king did not feel any shock or electric current from the master, nor did he become unconscious while receiving transcendental knowledge from the master. One should not, therefore, become a victim of these unauthorized advertisements made by some bogus representative of Vedic knowledge. The sages of Naimisharanya were very respectful in hearing about Maharaj Parikshit because of his receiving knowledge from Shukadeva Goswami by means of ardent hearing. Ardent hearing from the bona fide master is the only way to receive transcendental knowledge, and there is no need for medical performances or occult mysticism for miraculous effects. The process is simple, but only the sincere party can achieve the desired result. Omagyana timanandasya kinanjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Vancha Kaupa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Petitanam Pavanevyo Vaishna Vebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, this is an important part of the Bhagavad Gita because it describes the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, who we can say in one sense is the original hero of the Bhagavad Gita, along with Shukadev Goswami, who was the original speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. So, Parikshit literally means one who is searching. Because, as we've heard previously, Parikshit was in the womb of Uttara, his mother. Right. So Uttara was the daughter of which person? Uttara was, she was married to Abhimanyu, who is the father of Maharaj Parikshit. She was the daughter of Virat. Very good. Yeah, Virat. So the Pandavas, they had to go to the forest for how many years? What was the curse? 13 years, right? 13. So it was 12 years they had to go to the forest, and in the 13th year they had to stay incognito. They could not be discovered in that 13th year. So 12 years living in the forest, and then in the final year, agreement was that if they were discovered, they had to go back to the forest again for another 13 years. So in that final year, they had to hide incognito. They had to be undercover. So they hid in the kingdom of Virat, who was a great king, a very pious king. So each one of them took a different position. They entered into the kingdom one by one, and they disguised themselves so they would not be recognized as being the Pandavas. So Yudhishthira entered, and Yudhishthira said that he was previously, when he entered, he said to Virat, he was previously the advisor of Yudhishthira. So he dressed up like an advisor, like a Brahminical kind of personality. And he said, I will advise you. During this 1 year, the Pandavas have gone into cognito. They've gone to hide for 1 year. So now I will come and I will be your advisor for 1 year. So Virat accepted him. And then Bhima entered. And Bhima said, I was the cook of Yudhishthira, of the Pandavas. So I will cook for you for 1 year. So Bhima took the position of the cook for 1 year. And then Nakula and Sahadev, they came. And Nakula and Sahadev, one of them said, we used to look after the Pandavas' cows, and one of us used to look after their horses. So we will look after your horses for 1 year, we'll train your horses, and the other one will look after the cows for 1 year. And then Arjuna entered, and Arjuna had been cursed, because during those 12 years when he was in the forest, he had to go to the heavenly planets, to Swarga. So he was taken by Indra, his father, to Swarga, and he was given many astras at that time by the various demigods. Shiva gave him Pashupati, and he received the most powerful weapons. He received Indra's thunderbolt, Yamaraja's dunder, chastising, right? He received the most powerful weapons at that time. So he went and he stayed for a period of time in Swarga, in the heavenly planets, with Indra. and he was sitting on the throne with Indra, because he was the son of Indra. Normally a human cannot go to the heavenly planets in the self same form. You have to die, take a demigod form or a devata form. But he entered in that self same form, and he was sitting there on the throne of Indra, and he defeated many demons on behalf of the demigods, and he was very famous. He was enjoying in the heavenly planets. He learnt from some of the Gandhavas in the heavenly planets. He made friends with them, and they taught him how to dance and how to sing. So he studied dancing and singing during that time while he was in the heavenly planets. And then one of the apsaras, means one of the beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, who are dancers in the court of Indra, they became very attracted to Arjuna. I think it was Urvashi. Was it Urvashi? Yeah, Urvashi became attracted. So she is famous all over the world. She's famous even on Earth. We know her name, Manaka, Urvashi. We know the names of these heavenly damsels. They're very beautiful, very qualified, very famous. So they're living in the heavenly planets. So Urvashi, one of Arjuna's forefathers, had died and gone to Swarga. His name was Nahush. So he went to Swarga, to the heavenly planets. And he, at one time, because in the heavenly planets there's marriage, but there's also intermingling. There's no, like in on Earth, there's reactions for illicit sex. In other words, if you're married to one person, but you have a relationship with another person, there is a karmic reaction. But that is not there in the heavenly planets. So even though some of them are married, Indra is married to Sachi as his wife, but still there is some intermingling between the partners in the heavenly planets, and there's no karma there because it's a different set of rules there. It's a different society. So Urvashi, she became attracted to Arjuna, but she had had some relationship with Arjuna's forefather who had died and gone to the heavenly planets, Nahush. She had related with him. They were partners for some time in the heavenly planets. So in the middle of the night, Arjuna was resting, and Urvashi came to him in the middle of the night, and she said, "Arjuna, I want to be with you." And Arjuna, he just looked at her feet. He wouldn't even look her in the eye. And he said, "Mataji," and he said, "why have you come?" And she said, "I've come to be with you." And she said, "No, no, no." He said, "You are my mother. You are the wife of Nahush, like my great-grandfather. I can't have a relationship with you." So she was very insulted. Because in the heavenly planets, the rules are different there. And no one had ever said to her, you know, "You cannot have a relationship." No one had ever denied her. No one had, you know, her pride was hurt. So she cursed him. She said, "You will become a eunuch. When you go back to Earth, you will become a eunuch," which means like a feminine kind of person, like a man, but he's very feminine. They have them, actually. They're part of Vedic culture. They're mentioned in the Bhagavatam. They're men, but they dress like girls, and they're very feminine, and they're actually allowed to associate with the women in the chambers of the kings, like that. They're part of the society within Vedic culture, actually. So Arjuna was cursed. "You will become a eunuch. You'll go back to Earth, but you'll have to be like one of these feminine men. You know, you're not a real man. You have not satisfied me. So you will be a feminine. You'll be a eunuch." So Arjuna woke up in the morning, and he was quite, you know, a little upset that he had to go back to Earth and be a eunuch. So he went to Indra, his father, and he said, "Urvashi came to me last night, and she asked to unite with me, and I denied her, and now she's cursed me to be a eunuch when I go to Earth." So then, there's no chairs out there? We'll get a chair. I'll find something. So he said, "When you go back to Earth, you'll be a eunuch." And when he told Indra, Indra said, "Don't worry." He said, "I'll speak to Urvashi," like that. "We'll reduce the curse." So he went to speak to Urvashi, and he said, "You know, let's reduce this curse to Arjuna. Why don't we just take it back to 1 year? Because the curse has to be there. If you give a curse, it has to be there. If you give a benediction, it has to be there. You can't change it." So he said, let's modify it so he only has to be a eunuch for 1 year. And then he came back to Arjuna. And Indra said, don't worry, this will help you when you go back to Earth. Being a eunuch for 1 year will be a good thing. So when Arjuna entered into Bharat's kingdom for that 1 year, he entered as a eunuch. So his hair was plaited. Yeah, he had flowers in his hair. You know, and he walked in like, you know, a eunuch. He was very... And this is Arjuna. We're talking about the most powerful warrior on earth. You know, when people just heard his name, they would tremble. Right? You've got to understand how powerful Arjuna was. You know, all of Krishna's sons, like Prajumna, Samba, all of Krishna's sons, Arjuna was their idol. You know, they would all practice archery. You know, they'd be shooting their bows. And they would take, sometimes, you know, they would fight with each other, like they'd be playing, all the boys are playing, they'd be like challenged. And they say, I will defeat you in the name of Arjuna. So Arjuna was like their idol. Like they were, you know, everyone, Arjuna was like the idol of the earth. You know, everyone loved Arjuna. And now he's walked into Bharat's kingdom, he's got plaits, you know, he's got flowers in his hair, and he walks into Arjuna's kingdom. And then, into Bharat's kingdom. And then Bharat said, who are you? And he said, I am... He gave himself... Does anyone remember the name that he had? Biratna. Speak loudly, I can't hear. Biratna?
Biratna.
I can't hear, I can't understand.
Brihadnala.
Brihadnala, okay. Brihadnala. Brihad means great. What does nala mean? Nala?
Man. Nala means man.
Great man. Brihadnala. Is that what it means? Great man. Okay, so he walks in. I am great man. So he walks in. Arjuna walks in. So Bharat said, so what do you do? And he said, I'm very expert in dancing and singing, because he'd just been to the heavenly planets. So he'd learned that. And it was the tradition. They would go in with the girls, with the princesses, and they would train them in dancing and singing. They would decorate their hair. So Arjuna was in there for a year with Uttara and the other princesses, and he taught them how to dance, he taught them how to sing, he would decorate their hair, he would do all these different things. So for 1 year he was hidden like this. So
what was that?
We already told that part. Yeah, like that. We already said that the pastime of Urvashi. So for 1 year he was there. So they all hid for this 1 year. So they were being chased for 1 year by the spies of Duryodhana. Duryodhana had people all around India looking for the Pandavas, and they couldn't find them. But then there was some rumors coming out of Virat's palace, out of his kingdom. Some mysterious things were happening. Because then Draupadi walked in as well. So Draupadi walked in and she said, I am the... They said, who are you? She said, I am the maidservant of Draupadi. I was her personal attendant. So they said, very good, now you can be the personal attendant of Uttara. So for 1 year, Draupadi had to serve Uttara, and she hated it. Right? Because she was the empress of the earth. You know, the empresses, they don't serve other people. She wasn't a princess, she was like the empress. You know, she was the top, and she had to serve, and, you know, this young girl, plait her hair, and sometimes, you know, Uttara would say, you're not doing it properly. You know, she's plaiting her hair, you're not doing it properly. And she was just, you know, for 1 year, she was just holding her, you know. She had to go through so much for her husbands, you know. She had to, I mean, this is what the Mahabharata really teaches us, you know. What you have to go through, or the duties that you have to perform, you cannot back down from your duty under any circumstances. This is what the Mahabharata teaches us, that under any circumstances, we must fulfill our duties. You see all of them, right? You see... Yudhishthira himself, you see Arjuna, you see Karna, right? You see Draupadi, what they had to go through, and they never, ever, ever gave up their duties. Even though they went through the most difficult things. We have to analyze what they went through. Draupadi went through extreme difficulties, but she did not reject her husbands under any circumstances. So, Draupadi was there, and then the commander-in-chief of Virat's army, his general, his name was Kichaka, wasn't it? Bhakti? Kichaka? Is it or not?
Yeah.
Kichaka. Okay, yeah. So his name is Kichaka, right? Kichaka. So he's super powerful. He's like Bhima, like very powerful. So he was attracted to Draupadi, because he saw this beautiful girl came into the palace. So he was attracted to Draupadi. So he approached her privately, and he said, I want you to accept me. And she said, I cannot, I'm married. And he said, well, who's your husband's? And she said, I'm married to 5 Gandharvas, but you can't see them. They're all hidden, but they're there. 5 of them are there. So she's talking about the Pandavas. They're all hidden, but they're there, like that. So she was walking into the hall of Virat, and Kichaka was walking behind her, and he tried to touch her, and then she became angry, like that, because she's a Kshatriya woman. So then she, she walked in. And then Kichaka, he kicked her. Kicked Draupadi. As he walked in, he kicked her like that. And then everyone saw it, and Bhima was the cook. Like, he was dressed up as a cook. And Bhima just became ferocious. Bhima was ready to just rip his head off. He was like, he was not happy. So then Draupadi, she went to Bhima. She, met him. And she said to Bhima, Did you offer your obeisances?
Sorry.
Did you offer your obeisances? Okay, please do. So Bhima, he came in front of Draupadi, and Draupadi said, she said, what are you doing? You're supposed to be my husband. And this person has kicked me, right, in the hall in front of everyone, and you did nothing. Right? So Bhima said, okay, you go to him. And you tell him to come and meet you tonight in your bedroom. Right? So Draupadi, she went to Kichaka and she said, actually, I've changed my mind. Can you please come and see me tonight in my bedroom? So Kichaka, he was very excited. So he got dressed up very nicely. Dressed himself very nicely, put on nice scents on his body. Right, had himself beautifully decorated. And then he went and he walked into the dark bedchamber, and there was someone underneath the blanket, and he said, darling, please get up, like that. And the person didn't move. So then he touched the person, and then Bhima came out, right? And Bhima said, now I will destroy you, you dog, like that. So they fought, and Kichaka was very powerful. It's actually mentioned in the Mahabharata there were 5 people who were as strong as 10,000 elephants. There is Dhritarashtra, Bhima, Kichaka, and there's 2 others as well. Do you remember Bhakti? You remember who the other 2 are? Jarasandha? Okay, so Jarasandha, Kichaka, Bhima, Dhritarashtra is 1 other as well. They were extremely powerful. So Kichaka and Bhima, they had this massive fight with their fists, and they were just pounding each other. And then finally, Bhima, he became extremely ferocious, and he picked him up and he just put him on his knee and just broke his back. And he was so angry, because Bhima would get very angry, he got his arms and his legs and he pushed them back into his body, like that. And then he got his head, he pushed that into his body, and then he picked up, just like a tortoise, and he just picked him up and he went and put him in the front gate of the palace, and he just left him there. And everyone woke up in the morning, and the commander in chief of Virat's army is, at the front gate of the palace. He's like, he's all crushed. So then there was all these rumors going out around India. They were looking, pulp. He was just like, he was nothing. So there were these rumors going out. They were looking for the Pandavas everywhere, and there was rumors that there were strange things happening in Virat's kingdom. Kichaka had just been destroyed by this Gandharva. Some Gandharva came and killed him. And so Duryodhana was thinking, okay, now I think I know where they are. And so they're sending their spies up there. So they actually thought, okay, that's where they are. If we capture them in this last year, then they have to go back to the forest for another year. So they sent a whole corps of army up to Virat's kingdom. So Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Kripa, all the great warriors went there. And they attacked Virat's kingdom. And they attacked it from different directions. And then the Virat had to go out and fight in one direction. And then they came from another direction. They stole all of the cows of Virat's kingdom. And they were taking them away. So it was a difficult situation because the Pandavas weren't supposed to come out of hiding. But something had to be done. So then Virat had a son. And Arjuna, he came to him because they were being attacked. The kingdom was being attacked. And he said, okay. He said, you get on the chariot, right? And I will drive the chariot and we will go out. Right, and we will fight with these Kauravas. And this boy, he was just like Virat's son, he was just a boy, and he wasn't going to go out and fight with Bhishma, Drona, Karna, like these are the most powerful warriors in the world. He said, I'm not going out there. I'm not going out to fight with them. So Arjuna was disgusted because he's a Kshatriya. So he said, okay, you drive the chariot, I'll go out and fight. So, you know, he's dressed up as a girl, you know, he's got his like plaits. And everything. So then Arjuna, he goes out, and his bow, Gandiva, was hidden in a tree near the kingdom. So they went over and they got the bow, and he got Gandiva. And then he strung the bow, and he was in ecstasy because he hadn't touched Gandiva for 1 year. You know, that's his bow. His bow was famous. It was actually the bow of Varuna, of the god of the ocean. And this bow was famous throughout the whole universe. And Arjuna had this bow. So when he strung the bow again, and then when he twang the string of the bow, it makes a sound like the clap of a thunder, like a thunderclap. So touch the bow and it went like that. So all the Kauravas, they looked around and thought, what is that? Right? And then they saw like this unit coming towards them, you know, with this bow. And then they all looked at him and they all looked and they thought, we're pretty sure who that is, you know, because even though he was dressed the way he was dressed, he looked, you know, I mean, Arjuna's Arjuna, so it's very hard to. So then Arjuna attacked them, and they all attacked him. And then Arjuna, he used a weapon which he'd received in the heavenly planes. It was a sleep weapon. So he just chanted this mantra, and then he put everyone to sleep, except for Bhishma. Bhishma wasn't asleep, but he just acted like he was asleep. And then he went around, and he took the crowns of each of the kings off their heads, like that. And he took them back and gave them to Virat. And he said, I've conquered all these Kauravas. So then he defeated all of them, and then the Kauravas, then they said, okay, now we've caught you within the 13th year, so now you have to go back for it. But actually then they calculated the time, and the Pandavas said, no, actually, the 13th year has just passed by a day. So you haven't caught us, and now we can come back and we can have half the kingdom again. But then Duryodhana said, I'm not going to give you half the kingdom. So even though technically, their time had passed, they'd done the right thing, but he wouldn't give them half the kingdom. So then they made that alliance with Virat, and then that's when the Mahabharata began to develop. So the Battle of Kurukshetra began to develop. So Virat, after that 1 year, then he offered Uttara, his daughter, to Arjuna as a wife. So he said, please marry Uttara, please marry my daughter. But Arjuna said, I cannot marry her because I've been teaching her dancing and singing for 1 year. She's like my daughter, so I can't marry her. But he said, I will give her to my son, whose name is Abhimanyu. So Arjuna gave Uttara to Abhimanyu. And then from Uttara and Abhimanyu came Parikshit, who is now that's who we're hearing at the birth of Emperor Parikshit. So Parikshit was born from Uttara and Abhimanyu. Now, unfortunately, Abhimanyu was killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. They killed him unfairly. And then Uttara, she had Parikshit within her womb. So then after the battle was finished, then Ashwatthama, he wanted to kill all of the Pandavas' heirs, so that their dynasty could not go on. So then he got a brahmastra, a weapon, and then he sent that into the womb of Uttara to kill the embryo of Uttara, who is Parikshit himself. So that at that time, to protect Uttara, Krishna himself came in the womb and destroyed the brahmastra, destroyed the weapon. So then in the womb, Parikshit, he saw Krishna. So when he was born later on, he was always looking for that person who he saw when he was in the womb. That beautiful Shyamasundara, that beautiful Krishna. So Parikshit means the inquirer, or the seeker, or the one who is always searching. Parikshit, because he's always looking for Krishna. He wanted to see Krishna again, because he never saw Krishna again. Because Krishna left the planet by the time he was born, and Krishna had gone. So he never got to see Krishna. But he was always searching after Krishna within his consciousness. So, now, the Bhagavatam is speaking about the birth of Emperor Parikshit. So this chapter is a very extraordinary chapter, a very famous chapter. And it has many, many wonderful lessons within this chapter. If you read the purport, there's many great instructions within this particular chapter. Now it says here that Shukadev Goswami was imparting transcendental knowledge to Maharaj Parikshit. So in the Bhagavatam, when you get to the seventh canto, it says there are nine processes of bhakti: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Right? Nine processes of bhakti. So each process of bhakti, or each item of bhakti, has a particular person who personifies or exemplifies or perfects that particular item of bhakti. So Shravanam, who is perfect in Shravanam? Yeah, Parikshit. Parikshit. He was the perfect hearer of the Bhagavatam, because he heard for how long?
7 days
without eating or drinking. Right? Most of us can't even listen for 7 minutes. Right? I have to continuously look around the class and make eye contact with everyone so people don't fall asleep. And then when people do fall asleep, I have to say, excuse me, you are falling asleep. You're nodding off like that. Because this is the nature of Kali Yuga. So we're not hearing like Maharaj Parikshit. Can you imagine Maharaj Parikshit? You know, like, he's hearing the Bhagavatam. He's about to die. Now, what's the similarity between us and Parikshit? We're also about to die. Right? The only difference is he knows he's only got 7 days. Maybe we've got 700 days. Like, I had my birthday a couple of weeks ago, and with my brother, he said, how many days have you lived? So we calculate, I've lived about 15,000 days in this body. About 15,000 days so far. So maybe I'll live another 15,000. Right? But that's not many, actually. We haven't got a lot of time. Right? Difference is, Parikshit knows he's got seven days. Maybe we've got 15,000. It's not a lot. Those 15,000, they go by very quickly. My grandmother's 86 at the moment. And every time I ring her up, she goes, where has all the time gone? 86, and she says it's gone like that. Right? I'm 43, it feels like it's gone like that. I can remember yesterday I was like 7, like that. It's all just disappears. So what's the difference between us and Parikshit? There is no difference. The difference is he stays awake when he hears Bhagavatam. As Prabhupada says, you hear in rapt attention. He was hearing the right attitude. Right? He was listening. Why? Because he wanted to become perfect before he died. So that's how we should also be hearing the Bhagavatam. We want to become perfect before we die. How long have you got? Maybe you've got 15,000 days. That's not too much. Right? You know, it means we have to learn to hear very sincerely. We've got a long way to go. We have to work on our bhakti. There has to be some impetus to advance in Krishna consciousness like that. So Parikshit had the right attitude. That's why it's so important, this chapter. We're going to hear about the person who heard the Bhagavatam perfectly. Right. And then Shravanam Kirtanam, who was the perfect chanter? Shukadev, perfect chanter of the Bhagavatam. You'll see in the from now to the end of the first canto, it describes about Parikshit and Shukadev. So Shukadeva Goswami, you'll hear about his qualification, why he was the perfect speaker of the Bhagavatam. Right? Perfect in Kirtan. Right? Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Yeah. Smaranam means remembering. Actually, the goal of Krishna consciousness is to remember Krishna. What's Krishna's final instruction in Gita? Right? Manmana Bhavama Bhakto. Just think of me. That is the essence, that is the rahasya, or the essence or the secret of the entire of Krishna consciousness. Just remember Krishna. What does Rupa Goswami say? Always remember Krishna, never forget him. That's it. That's all we are doing. Right? So Prahlad Maharaj, he showed us how to perfectly remember Krishna. He never forgot Krishna under the most difficult circumstances. Right? When he was being thrown under elephants. Right? When he was being thrown off cliffs. When he was being put into hot oil to boil. He never forgot Krishna, and Krishna protected him every time. So that's the goal of our Krishna consciousness, to come to Smaranam, perfect remembrance of Krishna, under all circumstances. Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, serving the lotus feet. Who is that? Lakshmi. Why? Always massaging the feet. Now, if you read the seventh canto, the purport, Pada Sevanam also means worshipping the holy Dham. So any service you do in the holy Dham, in Vrindavan, Mayapur, Puri, or this holy Dham, which Prabhupada said is non-different from Vrindavan, then any service you do here, it is non-different from Pada Sevanam. It is worshipping the lotus feet of Krishna. Just like Kartik Mas is coming very soon. So one of the vows that I often take, usually I go to Mayapur, Vrindavan during Kartik, but one year I was in Melbourne for the whole Kartik. So one of the vows I took was every day we'd circumambulate the temple three times. Myself, I think a few other devotees, we'd do it every day. So it's part of Sevanam, right? Because within the deity, because the deity is Tirthapad. What does Tirthapad mean? Tirthapad. Shelter of all the holy places. So Krishna is the shelter of the holy places. Now, in this universe, how many holy places are there? The whole universe. 33 million holy places in this universe, right? And they're all in Krishna's lotus feet, or they're all taking shelter of Krishna. So if you circumambulate Radha Vallabha, right, you've just circumambulated every holy place in the universe. Quite auspicious. If you circumambulate this temple, Govardhan Hill is there. You've just done Govardhan Parakrama. Right? Very auspicious, very powerful. This is Pada Sevanam, item of bhakti. It's very powerful. Like many, Pada Sevanam has many facets or features, but this is one of them. Pada Sevanam. Archanam. What does Archanam mean? Deity worship. Archana. You have to do deity worship, which means you have to chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra every day. Why? Because then you can get first initiation. What's the purpose of getting first initiation? So you can get second initiation. What's the purpose of getting second initiation? So you can worship the deity. Right? That's the whole purpose. That's our process. Our process is to do deity worship, archana. Our whole process is based on Bhagavat, Vidhimag, and Pancharatrika, Vidhimag. Hearing and chanting about Krishna has to be, especially in Kali Yuga, has to be coupled with doing deity worship. Because when you do deity worship, it purifies the mind and it purifies the subtle body. And then when you hear and chant, your hearing and chanting will be much more effective. Then you'll hear and chant much easier when the mind is purified. So you need to do deity worship. Right? And then you need to hear and chant so you're qualified to do deity worship. So they're integral. We have to do both. You have to do both. What's the point of being... Some devotees are Brahman initiated. They've been twice initiated by their guru, but they don't do deity worship. What's the point? You know, what's the point of being what we call a Brahman if you don't do deity worship? Our process is to worship the deity and to hear... You have to do both in order to purify your consciousness. This is the process in the age of Kali. So Archanam, Vandanam. Vandanam means offering prayers. So who perfected Padasevan Archana? Who perfected Archana? Preacher Maharaj. Yeah, he was a great king, but he did deity worship. Right. And then Vandanam, prayer, is perfected by? Akrura. So Akrura went to Vrindavan. If you read in the 10th canto, he offers beautiful prayers to Krishna and Balaram. He was taking them out of Vrindavan back to Mathura, and he got to Akrura Ghat, which is on the border of Vrindavan and Mathura. If you do Vrindavan Parakram, if you get around the back side, and then there's like a sharp right there, it's hard to describe, but if you've done Vrindavan Parakram, then you kind of gone right down the back of Vrindavan, and then you go around and there's like a sharp right which heads back towards the Mathura Road and Krishna Balaram Mandir. At that place, that's Akrura Ghat, just near there. So Akrura was taking Krishna and Balaram out of Vrindavan into Mathura. So they stopped to take bath in the Jamuna. And then Akrura was taking bath, and Krishna and Balaram were taking bath, and he went under the water, and then he saw Mahavishnu and Anantasesh. And he thought, and then he came up and he saw Krishna and Balaram, and he went back down again, and he thought, you know, they're non-different. But when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, it's not the original Krishna, it's his expansion who is leaving. So the expansion left Vrindavan. So he offered beautiful prayers at that time, Akrura, which are recorded in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So Vandanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam. Dasya means? Become a servant. Who's the perfect servant? Hanuman. No, he is the perfect servant. He's the best of all of them. No, he's very powerful. Hanuman is the best servant. There's no better servant than Hanuman. Right? If you are having problems in your bhakti, in your devotional service, if you have obstacles, one thing you can do, you can pray to Hanuman. Because he's very good at removing obstacles. Even if they're big ones. He just picks them up and he just throws them away. Like that. Very powerful. So you can pray to Hanuman. If you're having trouble in your bhakti, many people you can pray to, but Hanuman is very powerful. If you pray to him, he might give you some special help. He's very powerful. Dasyam, Sakyam. Sakyam means?
Friendship.
Who is the perfect friend?
Arjuna.
Arjuna. Krishna and Arjuna. Very close friends. Right? But then the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna goes and shows his Virat Rupa, then Arjuna said, "Who are you? I thought you were just my friend. We used to sit on the couch together and talk, and now like, this is what you are." Like that. So there's more intimate friends than Arjuna. In Vrindavan, Subala is actually the most intimate friend of Krishna, but Arjuna is listed as the friend in Sakya Ras. Generally they're in Sakya Ras, Krishna and Arjuna. And then Atma Nivedanam. Who is Atma Nivedanam? Who? Yeah, Bali Maharaj, which we'll hear about in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam. Bali Maharaj gave everything to Krishna. What did he give? To Lord Vamana? He gave the universe. You can't give anything more. What did you give the deities for Janmashtami? I gave them the universe. Everything. Just everything. Atma Nivedanam means I give you everything. But willingly giving everything. Not we give it and then we think later on, you know, oh my God, I just gave everything. Yeah, not like, you know, put, you know, $100 in the hundi and then you think later on, oh my God, I just put $100 in the hundi. You know, that's not what it means. It means you give everything. Imagine if you gave your whole bank account to Krishna right now. Just gave it all to Krishna. Everything. You just gave every cent to Krishna. How would you feel? You'd feel, oh my God. Now what am I going to do? Like that. That's what Bali Maharaj did. He gave everything to Krishna and he said, you take it. Because you will look after me. I don't have any anxiety. That's pure bhakti. That's Atma Nivedanam. So in the Bhagavatam we hear about all of these different personalities and all these different types of devotional service. So Maharaj Parikshit, he teaches us perfectly how to hear the Bhagavatam. And how do we hear the Bhagavatam? Prabhupada says, with rapt attention, with ardent attention. We hear the Bhagavatam. We relish the Bhagavatam. And that's the qualification to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. You can't make advancement in Krishna consciousness unless you begin to hear the Bhagavad Gita with rapt attention. Right? You have to study the Bhagavad Gita intricately, and then you'll advance very rapidly in devotional service. The Bhagavad Gita will just carry you in devotional service. So one of the most important things is to stay awake during the Bhagavad Gita class. Please do it. We highly recommend it. Staying awake, it's very beneficial for hearing the Bhagavad Gita. Please stay awake. No, thanks a lot. Okay, any questions or comments on what we have discussed?
You were mentioning that the process is between the first initiation and then the second initiation with the deity worship. But we also learned that first initiation is the most important one, second initiation is not that necessary, because you can still go back and do just the first initiation.
I wouldn't say it's not that necessary. Prabhupada never says it's not that necessary. Right? Prabhupada says it's not entirely necessary. He does say that. And he actually says that some people do not need to have it, or it is not necessary for them to have it. But by and large, for the initiated members of ISKCON, it was expected that they would take second initiation also, generally. Now, for someone to take first initiation, it's generally expected and accepted they will also take second initiation. It's not that first initiation is the goal, otherwise why did Prabhupada give second initiation? Why is that there? Right? So, it's not that Prabhupada did not place importance or emphasis on it. What he said that not everyone needs to do it or has to do it. But what he was meaning is that some devotees, it's just that not their nature to do deity worship. So, because that's not their nature, then Prabhupada was saying, okay, they don't need to. And actually, he said for those devotees, they should go to the farms. That's what Prabhupada actually said. He said those who are not inclined towards second initiation, they should go to the farms and just work for Krishna, like that. And chant their rounds, like that. But generally, most devotees are inclined and capable, and it is very beneficial for most devotees to take second initiation. So that's in ISKCON, that's our... Not that everyone has to, but generally devotees should do it. So we should not de-emphasize it. I don't think I would be able to make advancement nicely if I had just taken first initiation. Second initiation has helped me a lot in my development of my Krishna consciousness. So devotees should understand it properly. It is a very necessary feature. In Kali Yuga, it's very necessary to do deity worship for most people. Okay. Does that answer your question? Do you want to add anything to that? You want to say anything extra? Okay. Any other question? Karma is not there, but they get cursed.
Yeah,
that's, you would say, like, it means that, like, karma exists in the heavenly planets, like you're living out your karma. If someone's pious on the earth, they go to swaga to enjoy the reactions of their pious activities, but they don't really accumulate more pious activities at that time, like that. But a curse is a little different. It means that you've done something immediately and then you get an immediate reaction. That you're dealing with great sages and people like that. So those things are very powerful, so you can't remove them easily or avoid them easily. Sometimes the demigods, they upset a great sage or something and then they get a heavy curse or a heavy reaction. So I think it's a little different to just ordinary karma. Does that answer?
And then, so they are just living off their karma for us. They don't accrue any good karma over there. Is it correct?
Yeah. It's in human life, as a human, this particular form we have now, you're accumulating pious punya and pap, pious and negative activities. But then if you regress, because you commit too much papa and then you go back in the animal species, then there's no karma. That is your karma. You've got that reaction, you come back. When you become a human, then you take to the platform of karma again. And same, if you go upwards because of pious activities, punya, then you take birth in swaga, you don't accumulate karma during that time. You're just living off the reactions of the good karma. When the good karma is finished, then you come back to earth, you take birth as a human, and then you have another opportunity to change. So it's the human form of life that accumulates karma. Like that. So it's a very important form of life. Please use it nicely. Any other question or comment?
This Brahma is dangerous because of the heat or because of the power of the mantra?
A Brahmastra is a very powerful weapon. It's a power. The Brahmastra is so powerful it can destroy the whole universe. It's a very powerful weapon. And it is controlled. So if you just send it to one person, it can just kill that one person. If you chant the mantra, then you say the name of the person, then the person will just, the weapon will just hit that person. And it basically just neutralizes the person. You know, the power of the weapon just destroys every atom, basically. Now, if you say the same mantra, you know, the Brahmastra, and then you say, no, and then you say universe, you know, Vishwa, Rupa or something, and the whole universe gets destroyed like that. So it's a very powerful weapon. It can't be given to any ordinary person. Ashwatthama actually should not have got that weapon, but Drona gave it to him because he was his son, and he should not have had that weapon because he was not using it properly.
He didn't know how to control it. He did not know how to control it. He could throw it, but he didn't know how to control it.
Withdraw it. And he wasn't qualified to have it because he wasn't doing the right thing with it. Like that.
Just a comment on circumambulating the deities. There's a pastime once Lord Shiva asked his children, Kartik and Dinesh, to go and circumambulate the whole universe. So Kartik went straight away and Dinesh just circumambulated his parents, like Shiva and Parvati, and he said that you are my universe. So all the demigods, they admired him and
any other questions or comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.